SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Pro football full circle.
Circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle!
We are off and running in today's edition of Pro Football Full Circle right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius Channel 159. Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel getting you prepped and ready for this week's action. A lot of news and notes to get to surrounding the teams for week number 17. Starting quarterback for the Colts, Carson Wentz. Yesterday, we talked about it. He did test positive for COVID. Looks like Sam Ellinger right now potentially will get the start. The line in that ball game on FanDuel went from Indianapolis as a 7.5-point favorite, dipped yesterday during yesterday's show down to 6. Now it's back up to 6.5 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. If Carson Wentz does show asymptomatic and potentially does test negative, he can start that ball game on Sunday. But right now it is Ellinger over Las Vegas. And then yesterday we got the news that an icon in terms of the NFL, broadcaster John Madden, head coach of the Oakland Raiders for years, 10 years as a head coach, not one losing record as his career as a head coach for the Raiders, did die and pass away yesterday. Just one of the best all-around head coaches. And more importantly, Scott, really the pioneer of NFL broadcasting, right? We talk about Tony Romo and some of the best, but John Madden did it better than anybody back in the day.
Yeah, I remember him when he took over. It used to be Pat Summerall and Tom Brookshire, if you remember that. I'll date myself. And they were like the number one team on CBS. And then they got rid of Brookshire, new boss at CBS. And then they brought in Madden. And it was like, wow, he's taking over for a great team. And he just fit right in. And obviously the rest is history. So, sad news yesterday. I remember him on the sidelines. I remember him as a head coach with the Raiders more than I do anything else, believe it or not. I don't play the Madden stuff. So I remember him still as a head coach. Really underappreciated as a head coach. Took the seniors committee to put him into the Hall of Fame. This guy, after 10 years, had the highest win percentage of any NFL head coach when he retired. I mean, think about that. And it took the seniors committee to get him into the Hall for some reason. Never really got the true answer, Joe, on why he retired after 10 years. Young age, he got into coaching really young at 24 when he blew out his knee. And back then, that was the end of it for a player. So he got into it young, but he retired young. And then, he could have coached, theoretically, for another 5 to 10 years if you really wanted to, but enough was enough with the Raiders, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when you see some of the head coaches, right, in terms of the college level, Nick Saban being there for years at Alabama, yeah. and some of the greats in Sean Payton.
Belichick.
Belichick, yeah. Right? He could have coached 20, 25 years back in the day and was a Super Bowl winner in that regard. Remember Kenny King. In terms of that Super Bowl victory over the Philadelphia Eagles and Ron Jaworski, yep. Right? So, I mean, just a dominant win in terms of that. That was Al Flores, right?
Yeah, that was Flores. That was Flores.
Yeah.
He beat the Vikings.
The Vikings. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
With the defensive back there, what's his face, running down the field with the interception. With the
Old man Willie. Old man Willie.
Yeah, Willie Davis.
Davis. Yeah. Back in the day, yes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah, that was before my time. I do want to bring up, though, this game with Indianapolis this
weekend. Before mine,
because,
too, yeah. Yeah,
right?
Before mine, too. Yeah.
But we talk about a team, and we talked about Las Vegas having maybe, extra kick, and they've been playing well over the last couple of games. Now, with the Madden loss, you always look for an added dimension in terms of teams having an added push, right? Do you think that this really kickstarts them? Another reason to be maybe motivated against the Colts, honoring Madden this weekend. We know, I'm sure, they're going to be wearing patches on the helmets. I mean, just what he meant to that organization. You think we can get a gutty effort from this team on the road in Indy this weekend?
You would think so, right? I mean, a little bit, not not like if it was a player or you know someone in you know with involved in the organization. You know, these guys, I'm sure, know Madden, but I don't know if they have that same kind of feel. But I will say this, Joe: if there was one organization that would make them, you know, remember the history, it would be the Raiders. They're big into the mystique and the history and all that other stuff. So they would be the one. You're right. I'm sure they're going to have some patches and different things. I know it's Las Vegas versus Oakland, but you might get a little jump start. I mean, that is a good betting system of mine that I do like. You know, when someone unfortunately passes away or is sick, the team seems to rally. So you might get a little jump up, you know. I like them anyway against the Colts because we don't know what the Colts are doing, right? We said it yesterday, and I'm sure we're going to get into it. We thought that line, something crazy was going on with that Indianapolis team. That line dropped from 7.5 to 6, and lo and behold, about an hour or so after a show, we find out Carson Wentz, you know, it might not play because of the COVID situation.
Right. Now, he can play if he tests negative and he's right. Asymptomatic. But it's really a crapshoot at this point. Now, it got as low as 6, and then they bought it back a little bit. It's back up to 6.5 right now. We know Ellinger from his days in Austin. He's a mobile guy, still struggles with consistency. I still think the better pure pocket passer is Jacob Eason over Ellinger. But we know Reich likes Ellinger, drafted him this year. They could utilize him the way the Saints have utilized Taysom Hill, especially in RPO type of situations. So we'll see how it plays out. But I'm with you as well. Early on, I like the Raiders plus the 6.5. I also like them plus 235 on the money line. Total right now, Scott, set at 44 and a hook at minus 110 either way. When we come back, we'll dive into the ballgame in Chicago, New York, and the Bears coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel. We just broke down the early look for the Las Vegas Raiders and the Indianapolis Colts. And in the break, Scott brought up a pretty good point in the sense of what is asymptomatic. And if obviously the CDC changed the guidelines from 10 to 5 days and Carson Wentz does, let's say, show no signs of COVID, he can potentially play in this ballgame. But what does that mean? I mean, if he has the sniffles, is it a cough? Is it the sneezing? How do they gauge whether he's asymptomatic? I mean, if he doesn't have a fever and doesn't show any signs of a cough, is he playing on Sunday? I would believe so, right, Scott? So if there are players out there that want to back the Colts in terms of that situation, now is the time to jump in, right? And under the key number of 7 at 6.5 or 6, this would be a good spot if you feel the Colts are the better team to pull the trigger, because if Wentz does come back into the lineup on Sunday, this line can creep over the key number of 7 and back to the opening line of 7.5 for Sunday's action.
Yeah, which I don't think is right as far as, I would have loved the Raiders even at, 6.5, let alone 7.5. I think 7.5 is a little too high, but it could, you know, and I do believe Wentz will end up playing. Not that I know the situation, but yeah, I mean, who determines if you're asymptomatic or not? That's the key question. Is it going to be a Colts doctor? Is there an NFL doctor that's traveling all around, or a series of doctors, a number of doctors that are traveling to these facilities and say, okay, you know, stick out your tongue and say, I mean, and if you have a sore throat, you're symptomatic. If you got a little cough or a little sniffle, but you're bedridden, does that mean that you can't play? I mean, where's the line of being asymptomatic and symptomatic? Because if it's up to the player, I mean, unless you're bedridden, and listen, I had it, Joe. I had it for like 3 weeks. It wiped me out. Although I got up every single day, did a morning show at 4 o'clock in the morning. But it does wipe you out. You know, it does. But you have the ability to say, okay, I'm not dying. I'm not dying. Cross your fingers. I could still play. I just shoot me up with some IUV, some energy pills or something, and then let me get out there. So who's determining whether the guy can play or not? So that's what I want to know, because chances are, given the ability to play, a guy is going to say, yeah, I'll give it a try. You know, I'll try, coach. If I don't have the energy after the first half, then put somebody else in. Or if I'm not playing well, put somebody else in. So kind of weird, yeah. Right? I know what asymptomatic means, but who determines whether you're asymptomatic or not? Is it a simple cough, simple sniffles? You know, what does it take?
Yeah, and we'll see. And I'm granted, we're going to see different scenarios play out over the next couple of weeks into the playoffs. You know that the NFL does not want to see this type of situation, wild card weekend, divisional championship weekend, right. Second round of the playoffs. They want all systems go for their product and their brand, right? So they're going to try and do everything they can to get these players back on the field, and we'll see how it plays out early on. Scott and I do like the Raiders in this matchup, plus 235 on the money line, total set at 44.5. I broke the news earlier this week, said, good luck, Giant fans, in 2022. Head coach Joe Judge is back, along with starting quarterback Daniel Jones. They're not pulling the trigger and releasing both of those players and coach in terms of that situation. Disappointing performance. The Giants went toe-to-toe with the Philadelphia Eagles for a half. Second half, it was a different team. They completely quit, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Offense sucked completely. Mike Glennon, Jake Fromm couldn't get it done. Now they limp into Chicago. And they have played Chicago pretty well over the last few years, have played them tough. Now they're catching 6 points. Chicago did get the come-from-behind victory over Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks as a 7-point dog, 25-24. The total is 37.5, Scott, minus 110 either way. This is like, if you're playing this game, I don't know what to tell you, because both of these teams are garbage. At the end of the day, I picked up the over with the Bears-Seattle game. I'll roll with the Bears here, but I don't love it. Minus 112 on the FanDuel Sportsbook if you're taking the favorite.
Yeah, there's too many other games this week. This is one of the few that has absolutely no bearing on the playoff. I mean, you want to lay a touchdown with the Bears. Is it going to be Nick Foles again this week? You know, are they trying to win one for the Gipper? Do they like Matt Nagy? He's dead man walking over Chicago, more so than Joe Judge, who, as you said, apparently is coming back. Maybe the under, just because both offenses think, but this is almost an unbettable game. You don't know who's quarterbacking for the Giants. Is it going to be Glennon? Is it going to be Jake Fromm? I'll tell you what, if it is Jake Fromm, then I will bet the Bears. Now I got an angle, because he was just atrocious. As bad as our guy Ian Buck, Notre Dame's, was Monday night, Fromm threw for less yards. I mean, he had more completions that lost yards than he had completions that gained. That's how bad he was. 25 yards passing. So if the Giants say we're going to give him another crack in Chicago in December against the Bears defense, which is pretty good, then I do really like the Bears. But otherwise,
yeah, it's amazing. It really is amazing. No matter who you put into the Giants offense, they suck. They can't move the football. That's on Kitchens. That's on Joe Judge. But bigger picture, what did Joe Judge do to Mara and management to say, hey, I deserve another chance in terms of year number three? I haven't seen any road of improvement, not even on the defensive side of the ball. So what is it that this organization wants to attach their cart to Joe Judge just to say, all right, we have our coach in place. We don't want to throw things into disarray. We'll give it another shot. Saquon's coming back, and maybe Jones can bounce back in another way where maybe we could chip. You tell me, because I haven't seen anything that says this is the coach that I want to lead this team to the promised land.
Yeah, and for Daniel Jones, he's like the backup quarterback, right? We've joked about this before. Backup quarterback doesn't play. He can stay in the league for 2, 3, 4 years. He's not being exposed as being awful. Just collect a paycheck. But when the starting quarterback gets hurt, the backup has to play, and he shows that he stinks. Now he's no longer in an NFL uniform. And that's like Daniel Jones this year. You know, if he plays out the rest of the season, the whole world knows he's awful. But, you know, he gets a little bit of a reprieve. He only has to play half the year. And you think maybe you still have something. Let him have one more year to prove himself. When in reality, if he would have been starting these games, they would have lost these games also. It's just, you know, he's not awful, awful, but you're not going to win with him. I can't help but think, Joe, if you bring in a new GM, like I'm sure they're going to do, you know, maybe Joe Judge's, security isn't quite as good as they're making it out to be right now. Maybe the Giants are initially saying, oh, we're not going to fire him, but if we get rid of Gettleman, the GM, and the new GM wants to bring in someone, he's going to have that ability if he wants to. And I don't doubt for a second that if they get into this draft, and they'll be drafted and figure top five, and they find a quarterback that they like this year, they could say all they want about Daniel Jones being the man still. I would think they would draft a quarterback if they liked somebody.
I don't know if I would go that route if I'm the Giants. I have to be honest with you in terms of a younger quarterback. They haven't shown that they could develop one. I mean, you look at Jones over the last 3 years. I mean, I haven't seen any progression. I haven't seen a game plan built around his strengths over the last couple of seasons. So if you're not going to do that for a young quarterback, you might as well get a guy at least that's proven. Do they make a potential move Russell Wilson or even a Trubisky at this point? I mean, is that the type? I mean, because at the end of the day, you have to do something to, I mean, think about how many losing seasons the New York Giants have had. And we keep talking about it. There are players on the offensive side of the ball, Scott. This is not a barren offense. They have playmakers, and they're paying them a ton of money, and yet they can't devise a game plan to get the football in one-on-one opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, their wide receivers are above average. They're not even just average, you know, or like, okay. I mean, they're like above average. Not great, but they're above average. I don't get it. I just, you know, every time the Giants seemingly would make a move, that Daniel Jones would screw up because he's got zero pocket presence. I don't understand. You know, that's what happens. This is what happens, though, when you bring in, you know, a special teams guy as your head coach. One, he doesn't know how to run an offense or defense. And two, he doesn't necessarily have the ability to bring in good assistant coaches. Jason Garrett, you know, the failure in Dallas was going to be the answer? Really?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I agree. When we come back, we'll break down the game in Washington. Eagles and Hurts taking on Taylor Heinicke coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers bounce back in a big way with a dominating road performance over Carolina. As basically a 9.5-10-point favorite in that ballgame, now they go back on the road to face the New York Jets. Tom Brady and the crew, 13-point favorites. This line the other day was up to 13.5, almost two touchdowns. We know that Brady's played in MetLife before. He's, you know, understands the Jets. He loves to kill them and beat them into the ground. But I have to be honest with you, Scott. 13 points is a huge number. I know it's the Jets. There's no doubt that Tampa Bay wins, and I know Brady will relish this, but I'm taking the 13 with the Jets. They got an emotional victory over Trevor Lawrence and the crew, basically a goal line stand in the final minute of that ball game. Total is 45.5. I'm going to go Jets and the under in this matchup. I just have a hunch that the Jets will play Tom Brady a little bit tough this weekend.
Yeah, I love Tampa Bay. Back-to-back road games is no problem in my book. Oh, the Jets have the second-worst record in the NFL since 2017. Their win last week and the Giants' loss put them a half a game now ahead of the Giants. Now, think about that. The two New York, New Jersey teams, the two worst records. Amazing. Yeah, Joe. I mean, listen, they beat the snot out of Carolina. And what makes you think the Jets are going to put up any kind of fight? The Jets are 4-11, you know, and Tampa Bay has, you know, they have the history of like wanting to run up the score. Like, they don't call off the dogs up 20 points and give up an oh by the way touchdown. They'll score another one themselves. So they're the least concerned team there is for me on laying, you know, big wood like this, because, you know, they you know, Brady wants to pound and pound away. Yeah, this is like, to me, that 13 points is kind of like, to me, like 7 points, and I'll take Tampa Bay laying the 7.
Well, here's the thing. I know that, obviously, Brady's played there before, and it's going to be a balmy 54 degrees in East Rutherford on Sunday.
Yeah.
Rain in the forecast. You never know. Wet track, that could always lead to turnovers. Maybe Brady's wearing the glove. You don't know. He played in the rain against Mac Jones on the road. Didn't cover that matchup. I mean, we're not talking about a 7-point spread, Scott. We're talking two touchdowns. And we know it's Tampa Bay, one of the best teams in the NFC. But, yeah, you got to feel that the Jets would get up for this game, right? It's one thing to get up for Jacksonville, right? And they found a way to gut that game out. But they still played okay enough to pull that game out. But Tampa Bay, you got to figure, at least at the end of the year, this is a game, all right, let's buckle it up and let's see if we can go toe-to-toe with one of the best quarterbacks ever in the history of the game. Maybe the defense makes a statement here enough to keep it within this number.
Listen, all that rah-rah stuff sounds good until Tampa Bay takes the opening kickoff and goes 80 yards and it's 7-0 blink of an eye. And you're sitting there saying, what the fudge did I do? Why? This team barely beat Jacksonville, if not for a dopey head coaching decision by Daryl Bevel. Talk about failing up. The name their price. And whenever it's name your price and it's Tom Brady and now he's got a little chip on his shoulder because it is the Jets. And, you know, the fact that Green Bay's got Minnesota, you know, which, albeit at home, but, you know, Minnesota beat them earlier this year. So I'm thinking Tampa Bay's going into this game thinking, you know, we got a shot to be into that number one spot if Green Bay loses. I'd be surprised if Tampa Bay didn't win this one by 20.
All right. I'm going to take the points in that matchup. Not a best bet, obviously, but I might tease it up over the key number of 14. Might also tease down, obviously, the total at 45.5. We'll see how it plays out as the week progresses. Let's look at that matchup in Washington. I mean, you got abused Washington, 56 spot. I don't care if you had COVID issues. I don't care if it was second and third teamers. You got to do better than that against the Dallas Cowboys, a divisional opponent. I mean, Dak Prescott just lit your ass up in that ball game. It didn't matter. They moved the football at will. The front seven was non-existent. We saw Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne, former Alabama teammates. They mixed it up. Didn't get the word on what really transpired. We know Jonathan Allen's been very vocal about the defensive effort in recent weeks. But now it's a rematch of what we saw a couple of games ago, right, where they were catching 9.5-10 with Garrett Gilbert. They lost that matchup by 10 points. It got up to 8.5-9 right before kick. They didn't cover. Now they're only getting 3.5 at home. Jalen Hurts and the crew dominating New York and cover that number against the Giants this past weekend. They go on the road. How can you back Washington here? I mean, it is a fishy line, though, Scott. The sense that we have Philadelphia 8-7 over 500 trending, and we have a Washington team now that is headed in the wrong direction. Internal rumblings, defense punching each other out. They're going to step up against the Eagles on Sunday?
Yeah. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? Remind me, I'll let you know how this game is not this team, Washington, is not a good sign for Miami Dolphin fans, believe it or not. I'll explain here in a second. But, you know, the only thing you could say is that Washington mathematically is still in it, but realistically, they're not. It's hard not to like Philadelphia. Philadelphia winning 3 in a row, Washington losing 3 in a row. Except for the fact that Washington's at home. Other than that, there is nothing going for this football team. Dissension on the sidelines, as you mentioned. Guys throwing punches. I mean, why would you take Washington except for the fact that they're at home? And that's not going to cut it for me. So Philadelphia would be the one. But here's why I'm going to bring Miami into the picture here, as we always like to do whenever possible, Joe. Washington, because of the COVID situation, not because of the NFL, so I won't blame the NFL, but Washington had to play a road game Tuesday, and then they played the road game against Dallas. So we saw what happened on a short week, back-to-back road games. What does that have to do with the Dolphins, you say? Well, guess how many teams the Dolphins played Monday night, right, at New Orleans? Mm-hmm. Now they got to go on the road and play at Tennessee. Guess how many teams, Joe, was forced to play a road Monday night and then a following road Sunday game?
When, the whole season?
For the whole season. How many Monday night road teams played on the road the next week?
I'm going to say 10.
Whew, not even close.
40?
Not even close. How about none this year? No, I should have said this year. I'm sorry.
All right.
There's not one. The Miami Dolphins are the only team to play on the road Monday night and then play on the road the following week. So what does that have to do with Washington? Just what happened in Washington? You know, is it a product of Washington just being awful, or was it a product of having Washington, you know, have two road trips on a short week? They had one less day, admittedly. But still, You know, and I can't help but think, you know, that goes back to the Dolphins telling the NFL we don't want to have a bye week. That would be my only, you know, if you ask the NFL, I wonder if the NFL would say, well, when the Dolphins decided not to have the bye week after their Europe trip, as nearly everyone does, that just kind of screwed everything up. And they were stuck with whatever we were going to give them. But they are the only team to have to play a road game after a road Monday night. So because of that, I love Tennessee, unfortunately. Or at least I'll say Miami's in a very difficult spot. How about that? Is that weird or what?
Nah, I understand what you're saying, but here's the problem. Why is it? All right, I understand the Monday night back to back. I get that. It's an extra day. I understand that. But we're not concerned about the West Coast trip in terms of back to back road games. New England did that. Remember when New England? Who did they play? I'm trying to think. They went to the West Coast. They played the LA Chargers, and then they had a following week where I think they went to Carolina. And they had no qualms with that. So back-to-back road
games. But not on a short week. But not on a short week, though.
But the short week is only one day. I mean, really.
One day. Well, it's really 2 days. It's really 2 days, Joe, because if you play Sunday afternoon, you're home in bed at 6 o'clock your local time. You play Monday night, you're not getting home until Tuesday. So it's 2 days, really, even though it's 1 day late, because it's 1 day later, but it's a night game. You know, again, you're 1 o'clock, so local time game, you're home in bed at 6 o'clock if you want to. So it's 2 days short, and now you're hopping on a plane on a Friday or Saturday the following week. That's a difficult spot. Look, what was it, 56-14? Was that the final this past Sunday night?
They absolutely abused them.
Well, you know. Do you think that had something to do with it? Maybe. I would think so, right? There's a reason why the NFL doesn't do it, right? Because out of 16 weeks, you would think, theoretically, anywhere, like you said, about 10 times, 8 times, 50-50, right? If it's no big deal. Nope. Only one. Only for our beloved Dolphins. Thank you very much,
I got to be honest with you. Greer. This line was 3. We talked about it yesterday. I talked about Miami. I think they match up well from a defensive perspective. I'm not scared. I know A.J. Brown stepped up. He abused San Francisco. But I'm not worried about Tannehill in this game. I'm just not. I think the more complete team right here, right now, is Miami. They're on a roll. I'm not willing to step in front of that train, even though it is Tennessee at home. They got an extra couple of days of preparation. You're right. So Miami on a short week. Tennessee played on a Thursday, and that's why we're seeing the line movement, right, from 3 to 3.5. It's tough. Yeah, you know, if I back Miami here and they lose, I'm going to use that as the reason why. Why didn't I listen to myself? Didn't I listen to myself? And Scott, he brought up a great point, and I bucked the trend, you know. But at the end of the day, 7 straight wins, you know. And you have to believe this team is going to give it. They're all playing on the road in that matchup. We did talk about L.A. and Baltimore, right, and yesterday. Lamar Jackson back at practice today. Are you willing, now that he's back at practice, to potentially pull the trigger against the L.A. Rams? As I mentioned yesterday, not sold on Matt Stafford and the crew. I'm not sold on Sean McVay making a Super Bowl run. We'll talk about it on the back end. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Ripping through the action for this Sunday, Week 17, Scott and I left off talking about the L.A. Rams and Baltimore Ravens. Lamar Jackson back at practice today. I said as long as Lamar or Tyler Huntley play in this ballgame this weekend against Matt Stafford and the L.A. Rams, I'm back in Baltimore in this matchup. This line smells to me in the sense of 3.5. Not sold on the defense for the LA Rams. I know they've stepped up now in back-to-back games, actually three straight, against Arizona, Seattle, and last week against Minnesota. But it is back-to-back road games for the Rams, right? If we're going to make the argument about Miami in terms of the short week, back-to-back road games have to have some effect on the LA Rams in terms of travel, even if they're staying, let's say, in a particular state a little bit closer to Baltimore. But I still think Baltimore could be a live dog here. I think the way you have to attack L.A. is on the ground. That's the strength of the Ravens' offense in terms of the offensive line, quarterback position. I still think they win this ball game outright over the Rams this weekend.
They might, but I tell you, they've lost four in a row, Joe. And anyone holding on to over 8.5 Baltimore Raven tickets a month ago was cashing that ticket, spending the money and kicking themselves for not doubling down on the bet. And here they sit 4 weeks later, still with 8 wins. And they might not win again. I tell you, when you look at their schedule, the Rams this week easily could win. And they got Pittsburgh, big rivalry game, no matter what's on the line, even if nothing's on the line next week. I mean, that you talk about a bad beat. 6 games to get 1 win, and it might not happen. I hate the, but supporting Matthew Stafford. I really do. And he played awful the other night. They won in spite of him against Minnesota. But I think I like the Rams. And this Ravens team, it may have run out of gas. They had so many close wins. No business beating Kansas City. No business beating the Lions. No business beating the Colts. Give them credit. They did. No business beating the Vikings, right? They had to rally from 10 points down second half. I mean, they got a lot of crazy wins this year. And I got a feeling, Joe, they've just run out of gas. I would lay the 3.5 with the Rams. And this year, following these numbers, back-to-back road games, not bad. Road teams, the second game, 31-29 straight up, 35-25 against the spread. So they've had success, these teams playing the second game of a back-to-backer.
Right. No, that's a good point in terms of that. I just think it's a must-win for them as long as Huntley's in there. And like I said, if it's Lamar Jackson or Huntley, I'm pulling the trigger in terms of the Ravens. We'll see how that game plays out. I do want to bring up underdogs for a second, especially at this point in the year, because we saw a lot of blowouts in terms of the favorites last week, right? A lot of double-digit favorites did cover, and just like Tampa Bay in particular blew out Carolina. And then when you look at this week, I'm a big backer, especially in the last couple of weeks of the season, that if you're going to take an underdog, I like good teams getting points, right? Meaning, obviously, teams over 500 who are fighting for bowl. I keep saying bowl. I'm thinking of college football. Playoff contention that are catching points. So I'm going to go through this list quickly, and you tell me which one you think is live. Forget the teams that suck, but I'm going to go through right now. Arizona plus 5.5 over the Cowboys. You got the Ravens plus the 3.5 over the Rams. You have Minnesota plus the 6.5 over Green Bay. And we'll throw in the Steelers plus 3 at home on Monday night against the Browns. If you had to pick an underdog, a good team catching points, where are you pulling the trigger in Week 17, Scotty?
To win or to cover? Or both?
To cover at least. And to potentially, obviously, if you're taking the Ravens at 3.5, it's right. Very difficult to lose a game by 1, 2, or 3. I'm expecting them to be live, right? So yeah. So for me, it would be the Ravens. But which one are you pulling the trigger on?
For me, it would probably be Pittsburgh. Just because I think the Arizona Cardinals are in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. I think Baltimore's in a lot of trouble. Not that Pittsburgh's not in the way they played the other day, but I've seen so many times this year with the Steelers that I'm willing to write them off and say, that's it, they're done. Ben is too old, he's got to retire. And then the next week, they'll come up with a monster effort. So they played so poorly against Kansas City, rival Browns in town. We all know the record with Roethlisberger against these teams from Ohio. I would say Pittsburgh at home getting points Monday night, Monday night dogs, they would be the one season on the line for them and for the Browns. Big game for obviously for both. Pittsburgh would be the one.
Yeah, I see. Now there's two that we talked about the Raiders. We talked about the Bengals yesterday in terms of they could be live against Pat Mahomes and the crew. That line went in Kansas City's favor from 4.5 to 5.5. I am intrigued that you didn't say Minnesota, because they're a helter-skelter team, just like the Steelers. Just when you think that they're going to lay a dud, that's when they step up.
When
you think that they should win and cover, that's where they lose outright. Case in point, where they were favorites against Detroit and lost that ball game by two. So, I mean, Sunday night, you got to expect that you might get a live effort out of Minnesota in that ball game. Now, we talked about Houston. This line now dropped again. Now, Trey Lance potentially getting the start on Sunday. This line was 13.5 for San Francisco yesterday, down to 12.5 today on FanDuel for San Francisco.
And I think, Joe, once they make it official, and I would be shocked that if it wasn't Trey Lance, I wouldn't be surprised to see that thing get down to like 10 or so. I mean, a rookie quarterback 10? Who plays one game, and you have any faith at all in Trey Lance? Not that you don't have faith, but you have no knowledge of what you know. He could be great or he could be awful, right? I mean, who knows? He didn't look good the one game he played. Didn't really necessarily look good in the preseason. You're going to lay double digits against the Texans team. That's not good. Don't get me wrong. But they have won two in a row, so they clearly have not given up. They have played, as we pointed out yesterday, like garbage on the road. Davis Mills' numbers have been awful on the road, but maybe he's ready to change that. So, yeah, I bet that would drop even more. If you like Houston, I would take them right now. Just like I said yesterday, I would have taken them with 13.5.
I got to be honest with you. I like the over. 44.5, it's inching lower now, and I guess the theory is that Shanahan's not going to put the game plan all in Trey Lance's hands, right? Look for Samuel, look for Jeff Wilson, look for, I mean, all of those running backs to get involved in this matchup, right? In terms of this ball game against an inept rushing defense in Houston, you got to think ground and pound for San Francisco first and then work off of play action. He's not going to open it up and say, Trey, throw it 35, 40 times in this ball game and take us to the promised land. It's going to be the running game. As the running game goes, so does the win for San Francisco and, more importantly, the cover.
I would think they'd find a way to win, right? Especially after they beat the Chargers last week. You know, maybe had they lost to the Chargers, maybe San Fran would just poo-poo them and say, nah, it's the Texans, who cared? But, you know, that's where the head coach will read his players the riot act, saying, listen, this is what this team is capable of doing. So, don't let us be the Chargers as well. So I think that actually helps San Francisco's cause that the Texans actually won last week. So I expect them to win, but I wouldn't lay double digits with a quarterback that we don't really know. Yeah, and then let's face it, a quarterback that, is playing at the peak of high last year. You know, he's not exactly coming from Penn State here or Notre Dame or Alabama. He's playing at Topeka High Junior. So he's really up against it. And we saw Ian Book and we saw Jake Fromm. Yes. And we saw how bad quarterbacks can be their first year, first starts.
Right. You're right. So let me ask you this then, based off the performance of last week, and we talked about Bill Belichick coming off a terrible loss at home where Buffalo didn't punt in the road win over the Patriots. Back-to-back road games for Jacksonville. Any love for the plus 15.5 with the Jaguars on the road here? Can you think of any way to back Jacksonville? They're catching 15.5, not 14, not 13.5. Two touchdowns and 1.5. I mean, come on. I mean, we know New England's going to run the football. Any shot that Trevor Lawrence can maybe step up? Let's not forget, it's Alabama. It's Mac Jones. He stepped up, played okay against Zach Wilson last week.
Yeah, he did play a little bit better last week. I will tell you this, double-digit dogs this year have had a lot of success. 30-6 straight up, which is pretty normal, but 24-12 against the spread, which is not normal. It's usually about 500. I've been following this stuff over the last 4 or 5 years. It's generally 500, but these double-digit favorites have covered this year. I know what? Not that Belichick runs up the score anymore, but I don't know if Jacksonville's going to be able to score. You know, back-to-back road games, despite what the numbers I gave, is pretty good, but back-to-back road games with an inexperienced quarterback, team that's falling apart. They had their chance to win one for the Gipper 2 weeks ago. They lost. Then they have another winnable game last week. They find a way to lose. this has got like 20-3, 24-3, 24-7 maybe written all over. When everything is said and done, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, they did cover the spread. You know, who wants to lay 15.5 initially? But, you know, when they got that, oh, by the way, touchdown in the fourth quarter, they put it over, and Jacksonville hasn't shown they're capable of getting that even, oh, by the way, touchdown. So I would lay the points.
Plus 750 on the money line with Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence, minus 1,200 with Mac Jones and the crew. Wow. And I don't know if you saw the press conference where the reporter asked Bill Belichick after the loss, hey, Bill, you have any New Year's resolutions that you want to? Yeah, that's a great question to ask right then. That's a that's a real beaut to ask, you know. Perfect timing. Your timing is impeccable, like
I
with
mean,
that one.
That was just, you know, the fact that it was a female, I won't even say anything. That's just like throwing me a softball. I give her credit. Is it ignorance, or does she have a whole lot of guts to ask that question, Joe? Did she not just know
comment.
That you're not supposed to? Or, you know, did she say, what the fudge, I'm going to ask it anyway?
Well, maybe.
I got to do
well,
story to do.
Potentially, maybe she was a Buffalo reporter. If she was, that's a perfect zinger. You know, you were cheering 2 weeks ago when you ran 222 on her ass, and everybody thought that New England was the team to beat in the AFC. Well, now we just beat your ass in your place. We didn't punt. How do you like that? You like that? So maybe I give her a lot of credit for asking that question. I do like his. I mean, he looked like he wanted to rip somebody's face off, right?
I know.
So I give her a lot of credit in terms of that. But it was making the rounds on Sunday.
Oh, all over the place.
Can you believe what Bill Belichick had to deal with? Oh, relax. You know, if you're so upset, your defensive scheme would have stepped up and shut down Josh Allen in terms of that performance. So I have no qualms about Belichick being upset in that matchup. But more weekly special, Scott. Two more that stuck out on FanDuel here. Plus 250, Lions and Seahawks to score one plus touchdowns in each half. That's not bad. Lions moving the football Tim Boyle last week, and Russell Wilson all of a sudden realized DK Metcalf is on the roster.
Yeah. And decent little odds. Not great, you know, not going to pay all my Christmas bills, but that's actually not bad. To both score just one touchdown. Yeah, that's pretty good, right?
I like that one. Now, Seattle's
like
a 7-point favorite at home. They're dead and buried. Russell Wilson doesn't want to be there, right? So that would be the only thing, is that if Russell mails it in, he's not going to run, he's not going to throw, then maybe you don't have a shot. But they can run maybe on that front seven of Detroit. So I like that one.
I'd be more concerned with Seattle scoring than I would Detroit, to tell you the truth, because of what you just said.
Exactly. A couple of the other ones that we'll think about is Jalen Hurts to throw for a touchdown, rush for a touchdown, plus 200 against the Washington football team. He abused them last week. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Scott Wetzel.
Wrapping up today's show, we always wrap it up with either a line or a weekly special. I left off with Jalen Hurts this weekend, Scott, against the Washington football team, plus 2-1 to rush and throw for a touchdown against the Washington football team. You give up 56 points against Dallas. You got to say that's not bad odds for Jalen Hurts. He did light up their defense at home in Lincoln Financial about a week ago, won that ball game by 10 points. That's not bad for a 2-1 shot in this matchup.
Yeah, no, that's not too bad. I like that. You know, I need to, as I told you, I got to get 250, 3-1, 4-1. Maybe he doesn't run for a touchdown. You know, maybe the game is so easy that it doesn't have, you know, I need more than 2-1. I'll lay off that one.
All right, so here's the big ones. And we talked about you want to take the Bills to win every quarter against the Falcons, 5-1. Dak Prescott, Kyler Murray to combine for 6+ touchdowns passing, plus 550 to 550, so 5.5-1, or Keenan Allen and Javonte Williams to combine for 3+ touchdowns, 6-1?
Don't like that last one.
Me neither, which means that's the one that probably one will come in.
Yeah, that's the one that'll hit. I worry about the 6 touchdowns because Kyler Murray is capable of running, so I won't go with that one. Bills to win every quarter, as difficult as that is, and it really is. If I was going to choose one, I guess I would choose that one. But I'm not in love with any of them. You know, Bills could have a letdown, but, you know, at home, you know, the AFC East, basically, they could clinch. I wouldn't think they would, but, you know, I could see them get off to a slow start and not win every single quarter. But that would be the one at 5-1.
And we've always said that Atlanta is a better road team than they are a home team, right? Yeah. Even though they got their second home win over the Detroit Lions, but did not cover the 6.5-point spread against Tim Boyle and the crew. For Scott Wetzel, our great producer, Andrew Torres, I'm Joe Lisi. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.